welcome to Comic Talk Today for Thursday, May 17, 2018. And of course, being Thursday, it is time for some therapy. Welcome to Therapy Thursday. My guest this week is Ryan Nguyen, inker extraordinaire, creator of one of my favorite things to read right now, from Novelty Comics, Death Betty.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, dude, thanks for coming on.
Can you hear me okay with the mic I'm using stuff?
Yeah, you sound fine.
Okay, and there may be a few noises in the background because I'm inking Ninjak as we talk.
You should tell me what happens in that issue. How far ahead are you working on that?
We're on issue 10.
Oh, wow. What, 7 came out today?
Came out. Yeah. So we're doing pretty good.
Dang, that's awesome, dude.
Yeah. My last two projects have been like that. Red Hood was like that. We were way ahead on our Red Hood issue that comes out next month, which is just nice. It's just really nice.
No, that's awesome.
But this issue is it's so badass. I'm working on a splash page right now. Giant explosions, lots of ninja stuff. There's a ninja with a letter at the end of his name in this issue.
What?
Big spoiler there.
Spoiler alert. No, that's awesome,
yeah,
dude.
Totally.
That's awesome. I guess let me introduce you to the show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Welcome, Ryan Nguyen. How are you?
Hey, I am doing well. I'm excited to be here. I love chit-chatting, especially when I get getting work done, too. That's what I love about having a hands-free headset.
Yeah, it's awesome, man. How was Infinity War?
I liked it more than I expected. But that's because I go into all these movies just thinking, all right, here comes some popcorn nonsense. You know, this is just going to be whatever, something to fill my eyes with pretty things and fill my ears with loud explosions and stuff. So that's kind of all I expect. And I really had a lot of fun with this movie.
First time watching it?
Yeah, first time watching it. And sorry, I'm still processing my thoughts on it a little. I think it's my favorite Marvel villain by far. This is something I thought most of the Marvel movies lacked, was interesting villains to me. And boy, it was like a Thanos movie.
Yeah, it was great, right? That's what I liked about
it,
dude. Yeah.
I didn't expect that. I expected Thanos to be, I'm sitting on my rock all grumpy out in space and this or that. I didn't expect us to get some real pathos with him.
You know, I went to see it with my kids. And matter of fact, I talked to my oldest one. We recorded and released something last week about it. And they both really enjoyed it. Matter of fact, like, they bawled their eyes out at the end, like the last 15, 20 minutes. But I was very surprised because my 7-year-old, she loves Guardians of the Galaxy. The oldest one, she's 14. She had seen a few of the movies, but like couldn't recall details or plots or anything. So they were both going in pretty fresh to this stuff. And I was surprised they enjoyed it as much as I did. And I think you're right, because they've done how many movies? Like 28 movies? I don't even know. Something like that, right? 20, 25?
Something like that, yeah.
And
more than you'd think.
Yeah, much more than you think. And I don't think many of the villains are really memorable, except for, like, Thanos springs to mind. Like, it's a fresh movie, of course, but like, if you think back, like, how many villains from those Marvel movies can you really remember?
Well, yeah, and everyone loves Loki, but to me, Loki was, like, he's kind of a cartoon villain in their universe. Even in the first Avengers, when he breaks in the beginning to steal the staff or whatever it is, I forget, from S.H.I.E.L.D., it's all just kind of, like, cartoony and stuff. And I did sort of like what's his name, Michael Keaton as the Vulture.
Oh yeah, that's good.
I thought that I was impressed with that, and the way they revealed his connection to the story actually surprised me. But that's still last year. So that's
right.
how many Marvel movies until we got to some meaty villains?
Yeah, I would say Vulture was a good one. Killmonger and Black Panther was a good one. I still think Thanos is the best. It's really like, out of all those movies, you can probably name like 5 or 6 maybe that were pretty good. But I think the last few are really the standout ones.
To be honest, I forgot about Killmonger. I've only seen Panther once. I'm actually going to buy it digitally this week and rewatch it again. But he was done brilliantly. I And I loved how much he was in the movie. He was such a great part of the story. He wasn't there just to be a foil. Like, you know, he didn't, I'm holding the town ransom and I'm going to poison them, or, you know.
Yeah.
Which, don't get me wrong, I love when the Joker does that stuff. But, I liked what Killmonger was. Yeah, these last few, it's been, some bad guys you could get behind.
you know what it almost feels like? It's almost like the movie villains are catching up to comic book villains. Because I don't think the comic villains are that mustache twirly anymore, you know?
No, you're right. Especially, I know I used the Joker as that example, but Scott Snyder's really brought the Joker into a different realm.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I think you're right. I think they are finally catching up. There's a lot they're doing in the movies. I think the more the movies embrace the comics is what's really going to make them work. Don't fear the ridiculousness.
Yeah, you're right. Well, and I mean, that's part of the reason some of these studios are buying comic book properties, right? I don't think they're just doing because they're out of stories. And they're not doing it just to buy the fans, because, I mean, how many copies are books selling nowadays? You know what I'm saying? Like, if it was 30 years ago and they're selling millions of copies, then, okay, like, maybe you'd have a built-in audience. But right now, like, people are just going for the movie.
Yeah, that's something I didn't realize as a kid so much in the 80s was how strong the tie to Marvel Comics and basically all of the cartoons we were watching, whether it was, you know, G.I. Joe or He-Man or something, like Marvel and a lot of Marvel creators were so tied to all these things. And I kind of lost my point on where I was going with that. Sorry. I was just watching these, was it Toy Galaxy does these documentaries on YouTube. And I went down a rabbit hole of all these, just how Marvel was connected. And it's not even any like conspiracy. It's nothing weird like that. It's legitimate, just like connections with the toy properties. But yeah, I did space on where I was connecting this to the conversation somehow.
Oh, yeah. You're talking about He-Man and the Secret War stuff and all that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Secret Wars, especially. Like, as a kid, I didn't know that it was all marketing gimmicks.
Yeah.
You know?
Don't you wish you were a kid sometimes, dude? Like, when you were grown up, all this stuff is, like, half bullshit, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, part of how I enjoy a lot of stuff now is through the eyes of my nephew. We hang out a lot, and he's 13 now, and I probably wouldn't get as into a lot of the movies, or I would probably wait till they were on, you know, Blu-ray or something to watch. But having his enthusiasm, it sparks my enthusiasm, and it, you know, gets me feeling like I did when I was a kid. And I'm always telling him, like, I'm the stereotypical, like, old man to him, where I'm like, you have no idea how lucky you have it. Like, me and my cousins and my friends, we'd have sleepovers and we'd be like, imagine if there was a Wolverine action figure. Oh, yeah. And now he's like, I don't know, I got too many Wolverine action figures. I'm like, shut up and watch your Thanos. Jeez.
You're so right, dude. It's so weird. I think you're probably a couple years younger than I am. I'm 36. And I think about that all the time with my kids, you know. So our oldest one's 14, like I said, so I can talk to her about some of the stuff. The youngest one, not so much, and, like, she doesn't really care. Like, she watches people play Roblox or Minecraft or whatever on YouTube, you know? But with the older one, she's starting to become interested in some of this stuff. And I think about it all the time, and I think, like, you know, if it was me, like, 12-year-old me would never believe that I'm having this type of conversation with kids. Because I think, like, the generation that you and I are in is like somewhere in between, where like we got to see the no internet and we were living in the internet everything. And so we're at that point. Cause like, you know, when you're growing up, your parents are like, oh, like back in my day, I walked up and down the hill 12 miles to go to school and like this and that. And you know, like we make fun of that stuff as kids. But now like you get into your 30s and you're around kids, either kids or nephews or nieces or whatever. And this stuff comes up and I'm like, God damn it. Like, I'm not that old. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. No. So I am older than you. I got 4 years on you.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. I thought you were younger.
No, I mean, I'm very immature. That's the key. No, but so he's always telling me, like, we'll be driving around. He's like, oh, hey, tell me about the 80s. Because like, he loves everything from the 80s. And he looks at it like I was super lucky to grow up in the 80s, which I think I was, especially looking back.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. And the real world things, I was like, Cold War, whatever. I'm watching He-Man.
Yeah.
I got my G.I. Joe, like, you know, stuff like that. But he also loves the whole, like, Wild West-ness of the 80s, where he's like, oh, when you and your friends, tell me that story about when you and your friends used to, like, rule the neighborhood and, like, do all these pranks and things like that. Because, like, kids just, they don't go out anymore. Like, he rides over to his friend's house and, like, they just hang out at the house.
Yeah, right.
All that stuff. So he loves hearing all these stories from the 80s. He's like, oh, tell me about 80s cartoons and when kids ruled the suburbs from BMX bikes.
You know, that's funny. Maybe that's why, like, Stranger Things hit so big with people, you know? Because, like, we remember that stuff. And then I think, like, younger kids almost, like, worship that era. So the 14-year-old, she's in eighth grade. I remember last year, like, she wanted to know about the 80s because all the kids were dressing up in 80s clothes, like, all the time. Okay. It was, like, the fashion around here. And she was extremely curious. And it was funny because, like, you know, these kids, their parents, us, grew up in that time. So I'm like, man, it can't be. It can't be. I figured I'd have another, like, 20 years before this stuff happened, you know?
Nope. You only get about 15, 20 years on a cycle, and then it starts coming back.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
No, that's it's funny, too. And there's, it's like that on the radio, too. Now we're totally turning into a couple of old men talking about changing times. But even the radio, like, the oldies station here played some early Metallica.
Oh, yeah.
Last summer. And I was like, what? Get out of here.
Yeah.
You don't get to play Metallica. I don't care how old Metallica is. You don't get to play it on an oldie station.
Well, you know, it's crazy when, like, Ace of Base is the oldies. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What? Oh, geez. So, yeah, now I know how my dad felt in the 80s when I was watching, like, Nick at Night reruns. He would come in and see the shows from the 60s and be like, what? What are they playing that for? That's not an old rerun. Like, yeah, it is.
Man, that was quite a bit of banter. I didn't even get to introduce you. I just realized that. I mean, I said who you were, but Ryan Wynn, why don't you tell the people who you are, what it is that you do?
I am a professional banterer. I come on people's podcasts and I just start talking before they can even introduce me. It's a delicate skill, but I'm good at it. I can derail pretty much any conversation or any podcast right from the get-go. But no, really, I am a comic book inker. I also illustrate and I write a little bit, but I am predominantly as a comic book inker. I spend most of my days. And right now I am working with two companies. I'm working with DC Comics. I have an issue of Red Hood and the Outlaws coming out next month, which will be June 2018. And I also am working with Valiant Comics, and the issue I'm doing for that is Ninja K, or Ninjak, depending on how you want to pronounce this series, this particular. And we're in with the Larry Stroman on pencil.
Very nice. Very nice.
That's me.
That's cool.
Go ahead. One more thing I forgot to, I do so many things. I also self-publish and create independent comics through my own little, I guess I call it a publishing line. It's just basically me and my house, but we're called Novelty Comics, and that's with a K at the beginning, a silent K. Mm. And you can find us on Twitter at Novelty Comics.
I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad I didn't have to remind you about your own comic. That's great. when'd you get on at Valiant? Was it with Divinity or was it before that?
Actually, it was before that, and it was not a very well-known or, not people's favorite book, but it was a favorite experience of mine. It was Q2, The Return of Quantum and Woody.
Oh, yeah.
And it was with Christopher Priest and Mark Bright, the creators of Quantum and Woody. So that was just a huge honor.
Yeah.
Like I said, it wasn't a super popular book. It was kind of still early Valiant, not super early, but people weren't. I have a feeling if they had put those guys together this year and done something, it would have taken off more.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of fell under the radar, but it was, it's for me, it was just a great milestone. Like they were two creators that I appreciated from the time I was in high school till now. So whenever I get a chance to work with guys like that, I'm really honored. And it was doing that that led to Divinity.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, obviously, I don't want you to chime in, but I enjoyed Q2. I think the people that really liked it could probably be counted on one hand, at least from my conversations. And not because of the creative team or anything, but I think by the time that was launched, people were already used to doing what James Asmus and Tom Fowler were doing on the rebooted Quantum and Woody. And
yes.
And to have, you know, Priest and Bright come back and do the OG stuff, which I remember reading, I think took a lot of people that were just coming into it aback. Because I think the people that enjoyed it the most were probably old Valiant heads from the 90s, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's, I was working at a comic shop in high school in the 90s. And so I was there for all the Valiant as it came out. And you're right. It was, that's why I think it would have been better if they had done it now. Like,
yeah.
It would be, it also, they didn't kind of, nothing against their marketing at all. I love the guys, but I felt it wasn't marketed quite right. It didn't have a, hey, check out the classic creators. It kind of felt like, oh, here's this other Valiant book. And then you're like, wait, what's going on with this?
Yeah, yeah.
So now I feel like now they would do it. Like if they had done it in the last year up to now, it would have been like, oh, hey, it's the classic creators. And it, you know, they would have a smarter way of marketing it and stuff.
Yeah, I wonder what the deal was. I always assumed there was some kind of backstory. I never asked Dinesh or anything, but I remember after Q2 came out, Christopher Priest wrote like a Kindle-only book, like a story about him working on Q2, and it was a fascinating.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a fascinating read, but he was not very happy. You can find it. It's on Kindle, on the Kindle store. It's like $1.99, I think, something like that. It's a very interesting read.
I'm totally going to check that out.
Yeah, it's interesting. He was not very happy, we'll just say that. So I'm not surprised it wasn't marketed correctly. But so part of the reason I wanted to have you on, yes, I want to talk about Death Vetti. But the thing is, you're an inker, Ryan. Why is it that inkers get no love?
It's because we are tracers. We're just the middleman. We're just the middleman between the pencils and the colors. And if people could do without us, most of them would. That's sort of how it is. But also, I'm not one of those people. I don't whine about inkers not getting love. It really, what it comes down to, it's really hard for people to understand what it is, and for them to understand like when it's good and when it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's specifically why the Eisners doesn't have an inking category. I know every year everyone gets all up in arms, and sometimes this year I even tweeted out a joke. I always just make a joke like, oh, I almost won best inker, but I didn't. But I saw so many people tweeting out with vitriol, just like, I can't believe they don't have because I think it's a best colorist category.
Yep.
That they don't have either, which that's easier to rate. But I saw people like actually being so angry about the award choices that I was like, oh, I'm going to take mine down because I was just having fun. I don't want to be lumped in with all these people whining about like the awards. So I deleted my posts, and I probably avoid jokey posts like that for a while. But with inking, it's really tough for people to gauge it. I think it's Comic Central is a website, and they had a best of, and they didn't have an inker either. And I wrote to the editor in chief of that site, and I just asked like, is it because you guys, you know, have trouble discerning good inks? And he said, that's exactly it. And he's like, it's so hard for us to talk about inks or what makes a good ink. Like, we can just say this image looks good, but we can't tell you what the inker did to make it look good or how to gauge it. And a lot of people get really mad at people that do their awards in certain ways, but it's their right to do it however they want, and it's their right to do it within their understanding of mediums and art and things like that.
I think part of the problem is a lot of people that like review comics and things like that don't really know how comics are put together, or like from beginning to end, right? The whole process. and they're just kind of fans talking about him or writing about him. And so they can't discern like the technicalities of what you guys are doing. And really all they're seeing is the final product too, right? So it's easier to figure out like how a color impacts a page, but maybe not so much how the inking is different. Like I remember I just had a conversation with somebody about the inking in, I don't know if you read DC Nation Zero.
I'm not caught up yet.
Okay. So there's,
I eventually will be.
There's,
go ahead.
There's a Superman story in there by Bendis, and Garcia Lopez is the artist.
Yeah.
And there was a little back and forth about this because the art didn't seem quite up to par for Garcia Lopez. And I understand like he's a lot older, so maybe his style's changed a little bit. Maybe he can't draw as well as he did back in the 80s. Dude, I saw the guy drawing live, was it, I think last year, 2 years ago, at Heroes Con. And the guy can draw like nobody's business still. Like, the stuff he was putting up there was freaking beautiful. It was him and Lee Weeks, and there were like live sketching up on a board while they're being interviewed. And it was incredible to see. And so maybe the problem was the inking for that book, you know? But I think that what they were trying to do is like channel sort of like that 80s Superman feel. So maybe that's why the inking felt off. Because, you know, just like everything else, you have different styles of inking as well, right? And so, if you're used to a modern comic, you might not be used to that aesthetic, and maybe that's why you knock it down a little bit.
Yeah, you know, and let's see, I got 2 points here. Jumping back to people being able to gauge it, when I see people get upset about, you know, what the awards have chosen to award and what categories they have, it's sort of like asking someone who's a big movie fan or someone that just reviews movies casually, like, how did the cinematographer affect that movie?
Yeah.
You're like, well, crap if I know. I just know that, you know, so-and-so director, I like his directing, but, you know, like, they don't know the cinematographer from the, you know, the lighting people. All that. There's all these little things that go into that. So that's why I just always ask people, like, hey, give the reviewer a break. If they didn't mention the letterer, maybe they thought the lettering was horrible and they just didn't want to bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, maybe they just have no way to talk about lettering. It worked for them, so it worked. You know, they because actually a good letterer, you shouldn't notice at all. But so I always just give people the benefit of the doubt because most people aren't doing their reviews maliciously.
Sure, you know,
they aren't leaving out. So it's usually they're reviewing to the level of their understanding.
Yeah. Well, and I know, I mean, I've done written reviews before, and I know that a lot of websites do have guidelines, and I think most of them are kind of standardizing on one, I can't remember what it's called, and pretty much it leaves for a smaller article, right? Because people have zero attention span, so you pretty much have like an introduction line, you've got a paragraph on the story, a paragraph on everything else, and then like a sentence to round it off. So you can be in and out and read them quickly. And that's part of the reason I quit doing written reviews is because I didn't want to be held to that kind of thing. You know, I'd much rather just talk about BS about a book if I want to talk about it. But I mean, even I like don't often talk about inking or lettering, you know, because usually I try to focus on stories if I talk about a book, not so much about what everybody's doing.
Well, see, and that's the other thing, too. Again, I don't argue online anymore, but when I used to, back in the days when I would argue online, that would be one of the things when I'd see people get upset and they'd say, hey, this reviewer, you know, they didn't mention this or they didn't mention that. And I was like, you guys, we got to be able to take our bows backstage sometimes. First of all, you know, be stoked that this person's even reading and bought the book.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the inking should never, it's not a factor in the story. It's a non-issue to the reader. The inking,
right.
The coloring and penciling much more important. Now I'm not diminishing what inking does. Obviously I feel inking is very important and I have, you know, certain strong beliefs about illustration and art and how things work and resonate with a viewer. But that doesn't, how I feel about my craft doesn't make it more important to the reader and it will never be part of the story.
Right, right.
So if people don't mention my inks, I don't give a crap. If they bought the book, awesome. If they liked the book, awesome, keep buying it. So the company wants to, you know, keep me employed.
Absolutely.
So coloring, I actually feel coloring is more important. It's very important. It's always been important, but I think it's more important than inking. Now, that sounds, I say that, and then I'm immediately backtracking. I don't think I'm backpedaling, but I'm backtracking because it's not quite the sentiment. I don't mean that.
I get what you're saying.
Against each other.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. It's not that it's necessarily more important, but it's more easily accessible, I guess. Like, you can readily tell when a color impacts a particular panel, whereas you might not be able to tell with what the inking does.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I take the phrase, take your bow backstage. What was it? The movie The Prestige.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So the real magician would end up backstage while the decoy was out on stage for the big reveal at the end. And he would always bow, even though he was backstage. And that's how I always like, I really appreciate that. Like, I like the heroes that are the hard workers that aren't looking for the praise. They're just doing it to be good at the craft or to do right by themselves or others or things like that.
Yeah.
And I always thought that was such a cool way to approach my inking, where it's like, okay, make the penciler happy. And if the reader doesn't notice the inking and they loved the art, then I've done my job. They don't have to praise me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's what it is, right? People just want the praise. Like, so you have your own book, which you illustrate. Well, actually, let me rephrase. You don't illustrate. That's a different thing. You're the artist on your book. If you weren't the artist, right? If this was a creator-owned project where you were just the inker, I think in that case, maybe you'd be upset if nobody brought up your inks, but then at the same time, like, they'd be talking about you because it's your book. You know what I mean? And I guess you don't often have, I don't think you ever have, like, the inker is the one that came up with the story and hires somebody out to do that kind of stuff. Because usually, I mean, like, you guys are artists in your own right. I mean, the stuff you do on Death Betty is freaking awesome.
Thank you.
And I think you kind of have to be a good artist to be able to do good inking, right? Same with coloring. Like, you have to be a good artist to be able to color somebody to understand how all that works.
Yeah, exactly. You have to understand anatomy and lighting and shape and form and both color and ink. You have to really understand things like value and tone and all these little elements that play into not only making an illustration or drawing look right, but also conveying the emotion or the story or the mood, whatever they're trying to get across. And it's a lot of similarities, like, but you do have to be, in both jobs, you do have to be, let's see, you don't have to be able to draw super well. Like, a lot of colorists I know, they drew really well in college or high school, and then when they got more into color, they don't draw that much.
Right.
But if they sat down for like 4 or 5 hours, they could pull off a really amazing Batman headshot or bus shot or something. They're just not practiced every day at it. So yep. It takes them longer. Good example of that would be like David Barron.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking about. Yeah.
You know, yeah. He's one of the best colorists in the biz. And then you see his sketches and he does fantastic sketch covers for people at conventions. Mm-hmm. And they're only getting better and better with each year. Like, he really started doing them like 3-4 years ago. And if you're able to like see his early ones, they're fine. They're fun. They're great. But he's really improved now that he's doing it regularly.
Yeah.
But he could always draw. Like, you know, he could always draw, and, you know, he understands perspective, and you know, you have to know all those things. But like, for me, I have a really steady hand and I have a really good eye and brain for making decisions, like final decisions. So that aspect of me as an artist or a craftsman, that works really well with inking, and I'm very confident. So that works really well with inking. Where coloring, like, I love coloring and painting, but it's more of a chore for me. Where someone like David Barron, he looks at it and he's like, that's nuts that you're dealing with a pen and a nib and a brush and doing all that stuff. He's like, I want to have all that crap done already and just get to putting in hues and tones and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, and especially when you've been doing it as long as we have, you get very comfortable in your own craft. So I still draw very slow. It takes me forever to get each issue of Death Betty done. And basically I was doing one a year, kind of in between Valiant projects. I'd crank them out.
Mm.
That's why they're short stories too. They're short stories, short comics. It's stuff that I can get done quickly. So I can get a 4-page done in between an issue of something. And then the main stories are like 12 pages. And so in between projects, I can do those, where if they were full 22 pagers, I wouldn't get anything done.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Death Betty. So why don't you just tell, well, not me, I've read them, but tell people kind of what Death Betty's about and how it came about. Because I think the origin story is kind of interesting too.
Oh man, I got to make sure I tell it the same way. So Death Betty is a independent comic that my friend and writer Adam Jackman and I created a few years back, and we just recently got to releasing it on Comixology. It's digital only. It's $1. They're like I was just saying, they're shorter stories, short comics, and we do have a lot of fun, like, you know, behind the scenes process and previews and stuff, but that's all just filler. So what it is, Death Betty is, the grand scheme of it is, it's the story of a girl and a boy after a breakup. And this particular girl, Betty, she's full of fire. She's very angry. She's very selfish. And we kind of wanted to see if we could make a lead character like that. If we made everyone else around it, if we made the story fun, could we have a really unlikable lead character? And then we were like, okay, well, if we want to have, I'm mixing what it's about with how we came up with it. So back to what it is. So the comic takes place after the breakup, and it's a really weird world that we created. It's a world full of basically full of emos. Everyone wears hoodies, and everyone has a logo on their shirt that is basically like their family crest of emotions or something. So some people's shirts, it makes sense. Some people, it's a thing you can't really tell what it is. And we don't focus on that a whole lot. It's just sort of there in the background. So it's this weird world. It's very colorful. It's cartoony and dreamlike. And in this world, Betty is out to stop her ex-boyfriend from doing his work. And his work is being death. He is the guy that carries you off to the netherworld. So she's sort of an anti-hero. She goes out every day and is trying to stop Death from doing his job. And we've sort of, I almost liken it to like a long comic strip as opposed to a short comic. Because there's like a gag. Each story is kind of a big gag, and almost like a Nancy comic strip. I don't know if you're familiar with that. That was an inspiration for us. I really always liked the Nancy stuff. And when we were coming up with the main idea for the book, I was like, okay, it's very Nancy. I want to do my own version of Nancy. And they skateboard and they surf and they do all the things that I liked doing growing up, and the pastimes that I don't get to draw or ink that often in comic books. You know, I do a lot of superhero stuff, so there's not a lot of surfing and skateboarding and, you know, just hanging out with your friends. So I wanted to draw something like that. So we had the challenge of making an unlikable character with likable comics and sort of an anti-hero. And then we also challenged ourselves with just short, fun stories, which actually are pretty hard.
Yeah, I bet.
We initially started out thinking, okay, we'll do short stories because they're easier. And then you realize that, like, it's not so much easier. It's easier once you get going. Like, now that we're getting our fourth issue done, and we have ideas for the next few, we're starting to get the gag formula down a little. But doing a short story, you got to cut out so much stuff and then still hope that ideas get through, and, you know, that you don't lose too much. You didn't trim too much of the fat.
You should read a bunch of Golden Age Batman, because that's the formula right there. And they're doing those things in, like, you know, less than 10 pages, sometimes even, you know, like that, 3 or 4.
No, that was another big inspiration for kind of all the stuff I'm doing with novelty comics, is looking at what was great about Golden and Silver Age comics, and not in necessarily the aesthetic, not copying a certain time period, but just what made this an enjoyable medium for people. And it was, you can just pick this issue up Oh, I've never read Batman. Look at these wacky things.
Yeah.
Does he do this every issue? I don't know. I don't care. Look, oh, they explained this thing. Okay. Things they don't explain, they're just kind of fun. And you move on. And there's, I kind of like, and I kind of think there's an audience out there for lack of a better word, trash comics. Just making comics,
I like it.
Having fun, getting it out there. And I don't mean that it's bad art or it's bad story, but I mean just something that it's not meant to be a holy grail. The object itself is not meant to be a collector's item. It's just, can we be entertained for a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I had the discussion with somebody, I don't know, maybe a week or two ago on the show. It's everyone takes things so seriously, you know, like even comics. And
yes.
Like you want to go and you find the best copy on the shelf and you buy a nice bag and board and you put it in, you stick it in your long box. And then, you know, some people won't even read it ever again. They'll just punch in their code that they get from the comic. I guess only Marvel does that now, but, you know, they'll punch the code in so they can read it on Comixology and never have to worry about opening that book again because they don't want to ruin it. And then there's some people who are much more commonsensical about things. Like I've got a couple friends who also collect Batman like I do, but like they'll buy CGC copies and then just bust them out of the case so they can read them. You know, like they're just buying them that way so that they have a good enough copy to read and enjoy. I know it sounds crazy to most people because I think I just blew your mind, but yeah, it happens.
So I'm not. Let's see. So I'm friends with the guys at CGCS who do the slabbing.
Mm-hmm.
And a handful of my closest friends in the industry and in the collection side of it, they all slab books. They do all that. So I'm not slamming them for doing this. They know my point of view. I don't like seeing a book get slabbed because to me it's like, you've just locked up that wild animal. Like, let it be free. Because there's such an object to me that locking it up forever. So you just blew my mind because those guys are like little vigilante heroes of mine now. They're like buying slabbed books and ripping them open. They can be free again. That being said, I'm getting some of my Louis LaRosa Divinity covers slabbed.
There you go. There you go. Look, there's nothing wrong with slabbing comics. I've got a couple slab comics that I bought. And I, matter of fact, I haven't even read them because I haven't even taken them out of the box. Like, they're still in the shipping box that I got them in. I've got so many comics to go through. Like, I'll buy something just so I know I don't have to worry about it anymore. But it might take me months before I even get to it.
No, that's I do the same thing, or I'll buy the single issues of someone I want to support, but I won't read it for 6 months, you know?
Yeah. Or I'll buy the single issues and won't read it, and then I'll just go and pick up the trade so I can just read it all at once. I'm mm-hmm. weird like that, dude. It's fine. But you're right, like, there's just so much of that, and I think it's probably leftovers from the 90s. Cause
definitely.
Before that, like, people didn't really give a crap. That's why you have some books that are so hard to find, because everyone just, you know, folded them up and stuck them in their back pocket and went on with their life. So I like that. That's a good sentiment.
Well, and it's kind of where things went, got expensive, is when they tried to make comics a collectible. They were like, well, they can't be on newsprint. You don't put a high-class art form on newsprint. And I got to tell you, ever since I started reading Alterna's newsprint line, not only were they hitting the nostalgia button, which doesn't get hit very much with me, I'm not super nostalgic. So I was like, oh, hey, this is cool. But there was just something to it. Just having the product, like, I wasn't trashing it. I wasn't like ripping it open, being rougher with it or anything. I still keep it in a bag and board and stuff. But there was just something about like turning the pages and my thumbs weren't sticking to the glossy interiors, stuff like that. Like the actual physical experience was more pleasing.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, that was probably something wasn't even discussed. It was like, no, let's put it on magazine paper. We can charge $2 more per issue, this or that. I like too that for years it really was more expensive to print on newsprint.
Mm-hmm.
Guys I know have been looking, and myself in the last decade have been looking into it. And then, Alterna was like, I found this guy. They're banging out $1.50 newsprint comics, and I haven't regretted one purchase.
No, and that's the thing, right? You can't go wrong, because at $1.50, like, what are you going to lose?
No, exactly. And I tell everyone too that what's great about him is you get not only like diverse stories, like, and I don't mean diversity stories. I mean, there's this diverse range of stories, like all kinds of different stories, and then creators from all different levels. So you've got people doing their first comic and you've got people doing their 20th comic. So you've got a whole range of like different levels of creators that you can check out and see where they're at and see where they're going. And you don't feel like, oh, I had to drop $4 for that issue. You know, it was like, oh, $1.50 or $4.50 for a three issue run.
Yeah.
You know? And like you said, you can't, there's no regret there, because if it's a comic that's done by a newer person and maybe it's not the best, you're like, well, it's $1.50 and hey, I supported somebody new.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was great, you're like, dude, that, like, I loved their series Croak. I was like, dang, man, I just spent $4.50 on this series and it was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah, I just got
Go ahead.
No, you go. I just got in on the Go West Kickstarter, because they're doing a trade paperback, I guess. Yeah. And that was a great one. I don't know if you ever read that. It's a Western kind of, sort of a Western.
I had the first two issues. I was waiting until I got the third to read it.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's awesome. They have a Kickstarter now for the trade. So, you know, like, why not, right? They're doing a digital copy of the trade for $5. You know, and then you can do, I mean, there's different levels. They've got a $10, you can get like the issues for $10, or you can get the actual trade for $20. Like, you know, three issues for $20 might seem high, but, you know, I think when you're supporting an indie creator, I'm more okay spending a little bit more, in particular if I know it's something I already enjoyed and I would want to have it in trade anyway.
No, exactly. Man, I've spent years and years and years spending $4 or $5 on 8-page mini comics by indie creators. You know, just not only do I want their stuff, but I want to support them. But that was the reality of it. When we first launched Death Betty in 2013, we actually had the first issue done, and then I put it on pause to go work for Valiant. But we had the first issue done. We printed up some copies, and gosh, the comic was, even with the preview pages and everything else and the back matter, the physical comic was only like 16 pages long.
Mm.
But I still had to charge $3.50
right
for the issue to afford to make any money. Like, that was as low. I think I was paying $2.50 for an issue because I could only order afford to order like 100 or so.
Yep.
So I ended up paying more. But luckily, people, they know that in the indie world, they know they're going to pay a little more. They know you're on your own doing that stuff. And we launched at Phoenix Comic Con, and I had a pretty good following and a lot of friends there. So we sold them all in our first weekend. So that was cool. But it was still, I felt weird charging $3.50 for 16 pages. You know?
Like, yeah, but you know, when you're not doing giant volume, you kind of have to.
Yeah, and at the time, we had it printed with a nice cardstock cover. It was printed beautifully, so I was looking at it like, you know, you're getting a physical, it's a boutique comic.
Yeah, right.
That's how I was looking at it, so.
So I got to ask you then, have you guys thought about printing some copies of Death Betty and going to cons and trying that route also? Or do you want to stick strictly to digital?
So I did do that. Like I said, when we had our first zero issue release years ago, before I put it on pause, we were doing that. We were going to shows. We were getting great reaction. I sold probably, I don't know, 200-300 copies of it over like 6 months at shows and stuff. So it did really well like that, but it costs so much and takes so much time that my new plan was that I don't want any of that stuff to stop the creation of the project. So no matter what, I wanted to get this stuff done.
Yep.
So, I do know, you know, I know people at Image, I know people at Boom, I know people at all these companies, and I could have pitched all my projects to them, and I have talked to them. A lot of people, like, people really like the idea for Death Betty, especially because you can buy any issue. That's the way we're kind of setting it up. It's like, yeah, you know, if you read an order, you get something, but you can read it out of order, and it doesn't really matter. As long as you're reading a chunk of them at the same time, you'll get what we're going for. But so I wanted to create no matter what. And my answering your question now. I feel like I started straying.
Oh, keep going. I like this. This is my favorite part.
So I didn't want any hindrance. And so it was about going to shows. And so going to shows, like if you talk to Peter Cimetti from Alterna, he doesn't do conventions really, because he's busy getting the product done and getting it into stores and getting it on Comixology more than anything else. And then spending his time just being like a wonderful, friendly, promotional dude on Twitter and YouTube and stuff. So, you know, as much as I like doing conventions, I like meeting people, it was not a way to make money. And conventions don't translate to in-store sales. Convention popularity is its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people get mad when I say stuff like that, and I don't mean it in any disparaging way. I don't mean that you shouldn't be doing that or shouldn't try doing that. But my evidence for that, not only in my own personal experience, but looking at Valiant, where Valiant would go out and they were using the conventions as like a focus group, but then things weren't turning out. They weren't being answered the same way in the comic shop.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that was part of the problem. Like, I was really surprised when they went to do like the Warp Tour and stuff.
Yeah.
And then looking at how they were promoting and what products they were using to promote at the Warp Tour. And I was like, oh no, kids, what you guys did is an amazing comic convention setup. Amazing, not a Warp Tour. This is not. And you know me, I love the guys at Valiant, and I don't speak disparagingly against them. But this move, I was like, no, you guys are taking what people are saying at the con, and it doesn't translate to everywhere else.
Yep.
So that's sort of another reason I was like, you know what, the internet is the world market. So I'm gonna put stuff on Comixology, even if it doesn't take off or it fails, if nobody read Death Betty. It doesn't matter. I got it done. I got it out there, and I can move on to the next project. And if someone wants to see something I've done, boom, there it is.
Yeah, there you go.
There's no, and I've been doing this long enough. I mean, I started pretty young. I've been in and out of the industry, but it's going on. Gosh, I started, maybe I was like 22 when I started working for Danny Mickey. So I've seen a lot of stuff in the comic industry, and I've seen a lot of stuff come and go. And I've seen dozens and dozens of creators have brilliant ideas that they kept waiting to do. And I was like, you know what? No, I'm not going to wait till I'm 50 and then go, but I have these hundreds of ideas that I've been wanting to do since I was 25. So it was around 35 that I was like, okay, this is it. I'm just going to start making my stuff. It doesn't matter if it sells. It doesn't matter if people like it. I'm just going to make this stuff, so that I have it and so that I can get it out of my stupid little brain.
No, that's good. Dude, that's a good attitude to have. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of people get to be our age or a little bit older, and you start having regrets of what stuff you didn't do, right?
Totally.
And it's nice to see, and especially in a creative format like a comic book, just freaking do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's even something that I recently got into. Because I've been reading comics for, I don't know, 30 years, 28 years. and I've been writing for myself for probably just as long, right? Like, since I picked up my first comic, I always wanted to like write a Batman story. Of course, like, I don't think I'll ever be published as a Batman writer, you know what I'm saying? But like, I finally decided a few months ago, look, I've got all these ideas, I'm going to put one and figure out how to do it and just put it out. Even if nobody buys it, even if only my friends read like whatever preview copy I make, like, that's good enough for me, you know, because that's kind of the end of 30 years of comic reading. And so that's good. I like that. But with that said, I think Death Betty is turning out really good. In particular, your art style and the coloring in here. We're not talking about the inker. That guy stinks.
Yeah, he's just a tracer.
He's such a tracer. But it's so imaginative and different. And you mentioned that you guys are actively pursuing doing shorter vignettes in these books. I like the way that the format of the first issue, the zero issue was great also, but I think the format in the first issue was a lot different, because you guys had like the main story, and then there was like that one page or two page prose, and then you had the newspaper article thing that was awesome, that related back to the first story. And then that super weird fireman story at the end was hilarious.
Okay.
But awesome. but it was fun, right? And I think that's what you guys are doing really well is that you're doing something that is just fun to go through.
That's exactly it. It was just about having fun. We weren't trying to, there's no message. And not, I mean, we're not against messages or anything like that, obviously. But for this particular thing, it was just that we just want to have fun. Like, and again, hearkening back to that golden and silver age, where it was just, how can we have fun? And you write your story, and we use terms like you either Kirby it up or you jazz it up.
I like it.
And those are sort of interchangeable, which is sort of like, you know, in jazz, you'll take a chord and you'll expand on the chord, you'll open up the chord, you know, things like that. So that's kind of what we'll do. We'll lay out all our story, and then we're like, we're not afraid to stray. We're in a lot, when I'm writing my like more serious stuff, like no way would I get as goofy or stray from the story as I would with Death Betty. But mm-hmm. With Death Betty, if we have that weird idea, we just go there with it because it'll be more fun to do that. And it doesn't have any outcome on some grand narrative or anything like that. It's if we lose you a little because we did something weird, well, we'll come back. We'll come back to it, and then we might do something weird again. So be ready for it. So it was sort of just the freedom to be fun and weird. And then, like you said, the first issue one has that prose story. We also just wanted Death Betty to be this, like, we can do anything we want with it. Like, we have short film ideas that we want to do. You know, we did a series of comic strips that were based in the Death Betty world. And we were, for a while, we were releasing them on the website. And we had our old marketing scheme was to put a page up a week of the series. And then when we didn't have a page, we put up this comic strip. And it was sort of before we had the current model laid out. And it was a lot more work, and people don't go to websites anymore.
Yeah.
No matter what you can have a weekly thing. It's got to be so good or so compelling for people to do that. So that's kind of why we nixed that. But yeah, we wanted it to be a property that we could just do whatever we wanted to do with, and you can't really do anything too weird, you know?
Yeah, I like it. Have you read a bunch of like Bob Haney stuff? Because that's what Death Betty reminds me of. You know, Bob Haney did not give two craps. He put the weirdest...
I know
weirdest...
the name. What do...
Oh, dude, go check out some Bob Haney Batman stories. Like,
oh, yes.
You will laugh your ass off. Yeah.
No, a lot of that... It's funny, that old Batman stuff is... To me, it's very Marvel. It's got a similar wackiness to it. It's unafraid, where I know there's always wackiness in DC, but there was just something to that particular wackiness.
Yeah.
Always felt very Marvel-y to me. Maybe one of the reasons I was such a Batman head for being such a Marvel kid, but I think everyone is a Batman fan.
Yeah. That's a
I
given.
I think regardless, he's the best.
He is the best. I'm glad you said that.
Yeah, well, he's... I don't know. He's to me, he and the things that stuck with me as a kid were Peter Parker, Spider-Man, and Batman, Bruce Wayne, Batman. Both of those were to me and still probably to my dying day, those will be not necessarily the best or anything. Or I guess I am saying they're the best. They're but not that they're like the most powerful hero or anything like that. They're not the best, but they're. God, they're just so well-crafted, defined characters that you can do anything. Now I'm getting all weird nostalgic.
Oh, dude, don't worry. I'm with you.
But yeah, I'm going to go back and check out more of those Haney Batman stories.
Dude, Haney is crazy. Okay, they don't call him Zany Haney for nothing. I'm telling you.
See, that's a Marvel thing. That sounds so Marvelous. Like, DC was never about the nicknames and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, like, he was doing that stuff at a point where nobody was really buying Batman comics anyway. So they're just like, here, dude, just do whatever the hell you want. And he's like, all right, like, I'm just going to put in, like, you know, crazy nuclear monster dinosaurs that, like, Batman can ride horseback or something, you know, just like weird stuff. And it didn't matter. It was fun.
Go ahead. I was going to say, that's what was so great about when Grant got a hold of Batman and was like, what if all of this stuff happened to one man? You're like, yes, yes. I wish they would have let him fulfill his Batman goals. Let him kill him off, whatever. You were going to do a reboot anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, I wish they would have just let him see that through, because I think it was epic as it was, but I would have liked to see his actual goals met.
Ryan Wynn, you are now my favorite person ever, because I cannot tell you how many times I've had to argue with people about the magic that is Grant Morrison.
Oh, what? Are you kidding me?
No, I'm serious.
I don't even talk to these people. No.
Unfortunately, they're friends of mine, quote unquote, so I have to talk to them. But yeah, dude, I can't tell you. All the time it happened.
Oh, man.
Time.
No, I would say Grant is like, I mean, if comics is my religion, Grant was definitely, I don't know if he'd be a prophet or like a preacher or what, but that, no, when there was a joke, like a Bleeding Cool, like April Fool's Day joke article a few years ago that was like, somebody's opening up a church of Grant Morrison in L.A. And
that's,
I was like,
hilarious.
All right, cool. I'm there.
I'm in.
I'm like, what do you mean this is a joke?
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, there's been rumors that he's going to take over Green Lantern. I think that'd be interesting. If they let him do whatever the hell he wants.
Oh, yeah. No, he's, what's weird is most of my favorite creators do their best stuff is personal work. And with him, I'm like, yeah, your personal work's okay. Get back to writing commercial superheroes. Like, even though he's my favorite trippy, like, you know, he does my favorite trippy indie stuff as well. Like, I what he did with Batman was so brilliant. I don't think there's ever, it's going to be 100 years before somebody does something as brilliant as that.
I agree. I'm gonna put that on a shirt and wear it to all the conventions, because you are correct.
Oh, you're going to get hate for that.
Oh, don't worry. I get hate for that anyway. It's fine.
All right. He's worth it.
He is. He's the best. All right. Ryan, every week on Thursday, I have a guest. And every week at the end of the show, we play a little trivia challenge.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. Yes. Your trivia challenge, man, if you couldn't guess, is how well do you know Batman, Ryan Wynn? Let's find out.
Oh, we're hanging out. We're hanging out right after this. Was that the trivia question? I got it right. Gotta go. Batman's here.
All right. So we're going to do this quiz. Ahead. Let's see how you do. The points don't matter, so don't worry. Okay. It's fine. I don't think anyone's ever failed a test. Don't be the first.
Okay.
Frank Miller wrote which of these classic Batman tales? The Killing Joke, The Long Halloween, or Dark Knight Returns?
I'll say DKR, just to show how hip I am.
DKR is correct.
Yes.
Good job, sir. All right, next question. Which of these actors played the Joker first? Jack Nicholson, Heath Ledger, or Cesar Romero?
Oh, well, that would be our mustachioed man himself, Cesar Romero.
Dude, Cesar was the best. He was.
Oh, yeah. My adult topic on that is there was a porn parody of the 60s Batman series. And they had the mustache on the Joker. They did the mustache under the makeup.
No, that's amazing.
And also, they had the costumer, the old ladies that were the young ladies that costumed on the show. They brought them in to do the costuming.
Shut up. In the porn?
Yep.
That's
Google
incredible.
It after. You Google it after. So the costuming, they have the Batmobile, everything. It's basically, it is the 60s show, but then it gets all bam chicka bam.
I've got to find this.
Yeah. Check it out after.
In comic continuity, who killed Batman's parents?
Man, did they change it recently?
They change it all the time.
Because I know Napier's in White Knight right now, but I'm totally... This is where I'm... Oh, my God, I'm drawing a...
Would you like some choices?
Hold on one sec, because I know it's there. Guy's only been in like 300 Batman issues that I've read. Is he another Jack? Oh my gosh.
So close.
I'll take a hint.
The name does start with a J.
Oh man. Because it's a catchy, it's like a Johnny something.
His last name is super cool.
Yeah, that's what I am failing hard here. Go ahead, give it to me.
Joe Chill.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
All right, you know what?
Right, I'm
going to give you the point because you had it. I could feel that you had it.
Oh, man.
So I'm going to give it to you.
Oh, I'm so embarrassed, though. No, I don't want it. I did not earn that point. That is no.
All right, we'll come back with an easy one then.
No. You bring me whatever you got.
Oh, some of these might get hard. This one is not. What is Batman's secret identity?
Which Batman?
Oh, well, we'll go with the Batman.
Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
The Bruce Wayne.
I always love how every time I see one of these questions, it's always like Bruce Wayne is secondary. You know, like Bruce Wayne is the persona. That's my favorite part.
Yes. Yeah.
Aside from his amazing crime-fighting prowess, Batman is also known for his love of other superheroes, detective skills, or superpowers.
Well, you must be talking about the comic Batman and not the movie Batman, so I'm going to say detective skills.
Well, the movie Batman definitely does not love other people.
There's that too.
Yeah. Batman's first titled comic hit in the spring of what year?
His self-titled?
His self-titled.
Oh, okay. So 38 was Detective. Oh, I'm gonna jump a few years and say it was like 40 or 41.
1940 is correct.
All right. Woo!
I should deduct half a point for giving me a second answer, but I'll allow it.
That's fair.
That's right.
That's fair. I should have stuck with my first choice anyway.
Never doubt yourself, Ryan. What are the names of Batman's parents?
Tom and I'm just kidding. Martha.
I was gonna say the one that you cannot forget.
Well, see, I was gonna make a joke about how easy it would be to forget that, and then I'm like, wait, I'm the guy who just forgot Joe Chill, so I can't make a joke about that.
Oh man. Did you see Batman Superman?
Oh yeah.
All right, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you place that movie?
Director's cut?
Yeah, oh, good answer. Director's cut.
Director's cut. I'll give a 6 or a 7 to the director's cut.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna stand with that. All right.
What about the theatrical release?
2.
Oh wow! 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 Yeah. Wow! All right, so I'm much higher. I really liked it when I saw that movie a bunch of times. Matter of fact, don't tell anyone, but everyone knows I saw Justice League 5 times. But I love
that's fair.
I love terrible things, so you know it's okay. What is what? Go ahead.
Wait, I'm gonna defend you. I don't think they're it's terrible.
No, they were fun as hell. That's what mattered to me.
I see now. If I was rating it, like my theater experience is a 10. Mm. I had a blast watching it. See, and I am a sucker for anything Zack Snyder does visually. Like you put the man behind the camera, I want to look at it. You tell me how bad the story is, I don't care.
Don't care.
I do not care. but if I'm judging the movie, like giving, you know, trying to be smart and be fair and, you know, I'll give it a lower score.
Look, that I think that's fair. If I were a movie critic, which I'm glad I'm not, then I would definitely rate it much lower. As a fan watching Batman Superman, when I saw the theatrical, I would have given it like a 7. The director's cut for me is like a 9. I love the hell out of that movie. And obviously, I love Justice League, or I wouldn't have gone to the movies 5 times to see it.
I was really surprised at how, like, what is it, 8 minutes more, 20 minutes maybe most than the director's cut.
Oh, that made a huge
Batman
difference.
Superman. Huge difference. Like, crazy difference. Because there was, like I had some moral issues with a couple spots, and I was like, oh, no, that works. Okay. Now that I've seen all this, okay. Mm-hmm. It totally works for me.
Yep.
Yeah, and Justice League was the same way for me. I thought it was bad, but I liked watching it. That makes sense.
I agree. It wasn't a great film, but it was a ton of fun to watch.
Yeah, like, and on paper, I should have hated that Aquaman, but I was like, I'm ready for the Aquaman movie now.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's just such a, like, dude. I'm like, hey, I know this guy. Like, you know, he feels like one of us, but he's super powerful.
He was awesome.
All right, sorry. Next question.
Nope, you're fine. Next question. What is Batman's one rule? Innocent until proven guilty. Do not date Catwoman, or he doesn't kill.
He doesn't kill, but I feel like do not date Catwoman. Like, you know, that's a Pennyworth note. Like Pennyworth has left that on plenty of post-it notes in the Batcave.
I agree.
Sorry, Alfred.
Well, they're getting married now, so I guess that's out of the window anyway. All
you
right.
Think it's gonna actually, you think it's going to actually happen?
Is it? Yeah. Is it going to stick? No. I mean, that's probably going to be the arc. I don't know what like the plans are with Tom King. I know a lot of people love Tom King on that book. I think Tom King is a fine person. I just don't like Tom King on Batman. And I think that's just what it is. Like, they'll do the wedding at 50, and then the next 50 issues until he leaves is going to be them dissolving their marriage, however way that works. It's not going to stick, dude. It's not.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not one of those... I don't fly into a hissy fit when they change a thing, because more than not, it changes back rather quickly. You know?
You always have a cycle in those stories.
Yeah. And I don't know. As I get older, I see things differently in the comic industry, and you have to have these changes. Otherwise things would just get stale, you know, even if you go back to it. People got so upset at Frankencastle. I remember guys at my shop were so mad, and I was like, bro, they're totally going to come back from Frankencastle. Trust me. This is not a long-term goal for them to do this.
Yep. Well, I know there's people pissing now about it, because they're doing the, what's the War Machine Punisher? Frank's got the War Machine armor.
Yes.
And then in the Thanos book, they had the future Cosmic Ghost Rider, who's also Frankencastle.
I'm reading that. I don't read Marvel. I haven't read Marvel in years, really, but I picked up an individual issue of that, and then I had to pick up a bunch more.
Yeah, it was great.
It was awesome. Oh, man. Like, you're caught up on that stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that issue where, we won't spoil anything for anyone listening, but I think it's like issue 14 or 15, and they're dealing with Galactus.
Yep.
And they're coming in for the kill on Thanos, and... man, you turn the page and Thanos just starts kicking ass and waves. You're like, what? Oh, damn. Oh, damn. There's just a lot of that. There's a lot of, oh, damn.
Yep. It's great.
All right.
It's great. Donnie's freaking awesome.
Yeah. I'm going to pick up more of his stuff. I grabbed his Venom. I haven't read it yet.
All right. So I really liked Venom. Like, I really liked it. But a lot of people really hating it right now.
Oh.
I'm not going to spoil it for you. After you read it, we can chat about it.
Okay.
All right. Who broke the bat?
Oh, wait, you fuzzed out on that. I just heard the bat.
Oh, who broke the bat?
Oh, that would be Bane.
Correct.
I was going to quote Bane, and then I was like, I can only quote movie Bane.
You are only allowed to do that if you can do the voice.
Victory has defeated you.
Amazing. You get 5 bonus points for that.
Yes! Points count now.
Edward is the true first name of what classic Batman villain?
I think you're going for Edward Nigma, the Riddler.
That is correct. Batman was created by Bob Kane and who?
Bill Finger.
The best. Did you watch the documentary?
Hell yeah.
Oh my God, it was so good.
I'm not a Kane hater, but I am definitely a Finger appreciator.
Hell yes.
Although I will say, in my younger years, my more punk rock years, I was very much angry at guys like Bob Kane and stuff. But I'm too old and too tired for that now.
The Emmy Award-winning Batman the Animated Series first aired in, was it 1990, 1992, or 1994?
94.
94 is incorrect.
Ooh.
It's 92.
It was 92. Yep. Oh, man. I should remember that more, but I was at the San Diego Comic-Con where they premiered it.
Oh, nice.
And my mind was absolutely blown. And they were explaining like the animation techniques, and none of us had heard of Bruce Timm before.
Yeah.
I was in high school.
Well, I'll forgive you, because it was 26 years ago.
All right. Damn, got that one wrong. I was actually pretty confident about that, too. Like, 94.
Yeah, that's those year ones are tough. Batman's son, Damian Wayne, is also the child of... Now I'll let you fill the blank. If you need suggestions, you can dial a friend.
I only say, oh, man, because I feel for the girl. I have a soft spot in my heart for Talia al Ghul.
Hell yeah, she's the best.
I have a Chris Burnham original Batman Incorporated page. Let me see. I'm going to get up and see what page it is. I can't tell what page it is here. It's too dark in my studio right now. But it's a page where Ross is watching Talia do ballet and one of his henchmen comes in and tells him that, you know, business is happening and he bails on her show. And then he's basically explaining all this stuff to young Talia. And it's the page in the story where we learn that she started cracking at a very young age. It's a beautiful page.
That is awesome, dude.
Yeah,
I am
Chris Berman's awesome.
I am very jealous.
I'll snap a picture of it tomorrow in the daylight.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Post it.
Yeah, let's see. What else did I got here? All right. What is another nickname for Batman besides the Dark Knight?
The Caped Crusader.
Correct. And final question.
Or the Dynamic Uno.
I like it. Oh, man.
Sorry.
Hashtag dad jokes.
As I got them.
Final question. Who is Oracle's / Batgirl's father?
I know him personally, so I'm going to go with Jimmy Gordon.
You know him personally? That's freaking awesome, dude. Is that who you're hanging out with after you record?
But it's the Tim Burton Jim Gordon. I don't get to any of the cool ones.
Well, Ryan, you got 14 out of 15 correct. That gives you 168,536 points. Congratulations. You're the winner of this week's trivia challenge.
And as always, points matter.
That's what she said. Oh. Awesome. All right. Let's wrap this one up. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you and your awesome comic?
All right. Well, I'm Ryan Wynn. Once again, that's spelled W-I-N-N. You can find me on DeviantArt as myself. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Wynn. You can also find me on YouTube as myself. And I'm fairly active on all three. On YouTube, I like to do demos and time-lapse videos. On Twitter, I like to do raffles and talk about comics and things like that. And on DeviantArt, I post high-res images of my inks and illustrations with more in-depth discussion on each piece there.
Nice.
Oh, and also you can find me at Novelty Comics. And again, Novelty is spelled with a K. It's a silent K. And we're on Twitter, and we have a book called Death Betty that is on Comixology for only $1. And we have a second series coming out this summer called Driver and Shotgun. And that's with Dean Kotz.
That preview looks pretty awesome.
Oh, thanks, dude. Yeah. There's a preview of it in all the issues.
Yep.
And anyone listening to this before May 30th, our next issue of Death Betty comes out Wednesday, May 30th. So check it out on Comixology.
Well, look at that. It's almost like I planned to coincide with something. Incredible.
Dun, dun, dun.
Well, Ryan, what I always like to do is whenever I have a creator on that's doing cool indie work, I like to offer people a copy of the book. So, to the first 5 people that get in touch with me, either via email, comictalktoday@gmail.com, or on Twitter, @geekvine, either a private message or whatever public message that's fine, I will gift you a copy on Comixology. So get on that.
Hey, why don't I double down on that with you, and the first 5 people, they get issue 0 and issue 1.
Well, look at that. You know what? Now you're trying to one-up me, and I can't do that. I will also do 0 and 1. Ha!
No, I mean together. We'll do it together.
Oh, yeah, cool. I'm down.
We're teaming up. I didn't mean to. Sorry, I meant to. I'll match you is what I should have said.
I thought you were trying to one-up me.
Yeah, no. Not a one-up. Let's team up. You give them the 0, I'll give them the 1.
I like it. So let's do that. So either get in touch with me or get in touch with Ryan. And that's going to be
No, no, no. They got to get in touch with you.
Oh,
get
just with me?
Yeah, that way keep it simple.
Yeah, I guess that would be easier.
With Martin, I'll PayPal you the difference.
You don't even need to worry about that. I do know that I had a couple people go and pick it up, because there's a few people that were sending me questions and comments before I recorded that I told them that you were going to be on. So
awesome.
There's some people awesome. Excited for reading it, man. That's going to be it. I'll be back probably tomorrow with another episode. I just can't quit recording, man. It's a disease.
A good one.